Welcome to the Real Python Podcast. This is episode 270. How is teaching young students Python changing with the advent of LLMs? This week on the show, Kelly Schuster Paredes from the Teaching Python Podcast joins us to discuss coding and AI in the classroom. Kelly shares her current thoughts on teaching Python to young students. She stresses that the earliest classes still need to cover the fundamentals. We also discuss how teaching to code is evolving towards more reading and reviewing code than writing it. All right, let's get started. The Real Python Podcast is a weekly conversation about using Python in the real world. My name is Christopher Bailey, your host. Each week, we feature interviews with experts in the community and discussions about the topics, articles, and courses found at realpython.com. After the podcast, join us and learn real-world Python skills with a community of experts at realpython.com. Hey, Kelly, welcome back on the show.
Thanks, Chris. It's so exciting to be here. We haven't talked to each other in a while, so it's nice.
Yeah. We would see each other at PyCon occasionally, and well, I haven't been in a couple of years, so I don't know if you're coming this coming up year. LA is closer to me than Pittsburgh was. I know it's further for you.
We're hoping that we can go. It's already been a busy like professional development year for me, but I keep reminding the school that this is where I learned about AI before everyone knew about AI.
Yeah.
And so when generative AI came out, I was like, I learned it from PyCon.
Yeah. And that's become kind of a interesting role shift for you. We were just talking just before we started how you are maybe doing a little less in classroom teaching and doing a lot more of sort of teaching the teachers and showing them how to use some of these new techniques in the classroom. And I thought that would be kind of a fascinating conversation because I heard you talk about it on your show, Teaching Python. And I was interested like, okay, well, how's that changed for you? And a few different things there. So I guess maybe we could start with the little background of just when did you start experimenting with AI in the classroom? Was that after some PyCon stuff?
You know, I'm trying to think of the name of the book, and I'm sure you know it. It's like Python Projects.
Oh, okay.
It's a book like this big. I don't even have it here because it's in my classroom, but it's the ones that had some natural language toolkit library where you take the Martin Luther King, the speech, and you put it in and you'd use the NLTK library, and then you can get rid of the stop words and you can reduce it to like 10 sentences. I started really getting interested in that prior to Gen AI.
Yeah.
And we did a little bit of playing with some of the eighth graders with some of those activities. And so I had already known, which was funny because I was a learning Pythonista.
Yeah.
And so just getting to know about that and then talking about SciPy and TensorFlow with some of our guests, it's been like a constant moving towards AI.
It's not like it wasn't like a straight 90-degree like turn. It's been sort of a curve.
It's been a curve. And so funny because when my boss, we were talking about this in 2023 about generative AI, and she was like, oh, we got to get ready. And I'm like, don't you remember? It was you that put me into Python. It's you that I already know generative. I already know AI. It's you. We've been doing AI at Pinecrest since 2017. She's like, oh, yeah, you're right. So for us at Pinecrest, we were always like in the forefront, I felt, because of the switch with Python in middle school kids.
Yeah.
And there weren't many schools out there teaching Python to middle school. So it was kind of nice.
That's interesting because I've had Jody Birchall on the show. I don't know if you've had her on your show. Mm-hmm. She's a fantastic guest. So just I'll let her know. Okay. But she's come on to talk about kind of where all the stuff started, like you're talking about, of NLP and NLTK and these sort of natural language tools that, you know, eventually from Burt. I don't know if you're familiar with that one and all the mm-hmm. different flavors of it to what we think of LLMs now. So that's cool that you've kind of been on this sort of cusp of it the whole time.
and not knowing anything and not knowing that I was really right. And it was kind of like this, oh, surprise. Yes, that makes sense. And Python made the library. Of course it did. You know, Python's everywhere.
Yeah. That's interesting because you mentioned a couple of the sort of experiments then in the classroom where you're like, okay, well, how can we use some of these natural language things in class? How did the students take to that? Were they interested in that?
Yeah, so I change lessons all the time in eighth grade, always kind of just going with the flow. There's a couple that I always keep.
Okay.
Like APIs, we were talking a little bit before the show.
Yeah.
We'll always teach APIs with eighth grade. And so that's nice because then I don't really show them how to because they're under 18, but I do mention that, oh, look, you can API into a large language model and then you can have this happening in your computer and you can do things with that. That morphed more of this year. But in the past, we used to do little personal projects, passion projects.
Yeah.
And I had kids prior to Gen AI doing betting or cards or some sort of machine learning practicing. But it was one-off, right? So these are my kids that were really into it. And then they can go into a video or they look at a sheet or something online, and they would start learning that. So it was never like a consistent generative AI teaching push in the eighth grade because they're still going through the basics.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something I wanted to talk to you about is that we had an episode recently with Stephen Grappetta and Martin Royce about just generally like what it's like to teach beginners right now. And I mentioned that I was going to talk to you, and I feel that there's still this need for fundamentals. Mm-hmm. And the problem that I think a lot of people are going to face is that they want to just jump ahead. And the problem with that, I think, and I'd be interested to see how the students kind of handle it, is that if they do have a problem without the fundamentals, they don't quite know where to solve it. Or maybe they've developed other strategies. I don't know. Which I think is kind of an intriguing thing that's happening with everyone. You know, it's like, oh, well, this idea of vibe coding, which I was mentioning this, The Verge, which is a technology website, they have a podcast and they took a bunch of their hosts on the show. These are people that know technology, right? They've been writing about it for years and years. They know what JSON is and so forth, but they're not coders. And they said, well, we should try this vibe coding thing. And the results were real mixed because suddenly they were asked these questions. Well, okay, go to this particular web address on your computer and stand this thing up. And like, I don't know what you're talking about. And it's like, well, you know, obviously you should know all the background of like, you know, standing up a project and running it and so forth. And it's all that sort of information is sort of missing outside of, sure, you can have it create a lot of the code. So I don't know. I guess I'm touching on a bunch of things at once there. Sorry.
It's so many things and you're so like on it. So I always get into, I shouldn't say arguments because that's a harsh word, but I do get into debates a little bit on LinkedIn, which is my social media of pleasure. That's my pastime.
Yeah.
And this one in particular is about, you know, this one person who is obviously very brilliant, right? And using Claude code to produce incredible things. And the vibe that he's getting, no pun intended, is everybody's going to be coding. Oh, we don't need developers. You know, soon this is going to get so good that they're not going to need anything. And yes, it can extrapolate everything. And if you have the NCP doing all the stuff for you and going to wherever you are, great. My concern is that one, if we do this in a school system, and we have these teachers who make something in a school system that is utilizing student data, or even if it's internal, like let's just strip away the fact that it could get hacked. Let's just keep it all internal on a local server.
Sure.
If we're making this and that teacher decides, hey, listen, I'm going to go to another school, or, you know, I'm done, I'm retired. that teacher did not have the skill to make documentation, how to use the program. What if the program gets deprecated? They don't know where the libraries are going. They don't know about the server. What if the server stops? All these little things, like what's going to happen when it goes away? And I was using the case in point with Sean, my co-host. He wrote this script with Jamf, which is our iPad management system.
Okay.
Because we're big fans of Al Swigert. And of course, he was getting aggravated, Sean, because he kept having to do the same thing. So he automated a couple of scripts. Great. It logs into like the GitHub, pulls down whatever. Some key got broke, ended, or needed to be renewed, or some requirement needed to be renewed. And the tech guys came up to me and said, can you fix this? I'm like, nope, not touching it. Not touching it. One, because I don't have the bandwidth to take on iPads, but two, like, you need to do something. You're the tech guys. You're the iPad guys. And so
right.
That process gets deleted, right? No one knows how to maintain it. And that's what I see happening when people do this vibe coding. That's just putting aside on the school side.
Right.
But
I mean, now you have like a very concrete example of how this kind of goes away. Like, I mean, that's been true in organizations that I've worked at.
Yeah.
You know, for the turnover can be high. Mm-hmm. And it's like, Bob built that 10 years ago. Don't touch it, you know, or whatever. Yeah. And it's still running in the background and shadow IT or whatever. And it's kind of dangerous in that way. And this is like, let's accelerate it, right?
exactly. But that's not even touching. That's not even touching. For example, a kid came to one of the high school computer science teachers and said, I built this in a no code platform. I have this database, and I can attest for this. I have this database, and you know, it's doing something. And when you open up the database and the no code, I'm like, there's a table, and it's all linking across, and it's not really formed.
Right.
And my SQLite is about as much as my Russian, maybe one word. And so I'm just like, I have no idea. Right. How do you fix that? And I think without that foundational knowledge, and I have foundational knowledge from about SQLite and how do we work with Python from a 6-month course, and that was it. You know,
okay.
So my foundational knowledge is, I can say the words, I can point to what that is, but I can't fix it. And so you run up with kids that are producing things or people that are producing things who can't fix stuff. That's like another problem.
Right.
Right. And then, and just going into the teaching with AI, almost every editor has AI embedded within it.
Right.
After the age of 13, it's like everything.
Yeah.
And our editors that we were using, for example, the Moo editor by Nick Tolerve,
disappeared.
It's disappearing. He's not maintaining it. He stopped maintaining it, I think, last year.
Right.
Which is hard, right?
It was nice because it was very
beautiful,
straightforward as far as like what it could do, and a good environment for a quote unquote beginner.
Yeah. You know? Nick said if anybody wanted to take it over, they could, but he's tired. So many people complaining about it. That's what happens with, I guess, open source. But anyways, that was like our go-to place. Because it was clean, it was easy. You can take a sixth grader there. You learn the basics, and there's no temptation. But
not lots of distractions of other stuff.
Not a lot of distractions,
right? Because I know that is what it's like in a classroom. Often, you know, having taught post-secondary, it's so easy if you don't simplify the interface for people just to be like poking around and everything, and then suddenly they've got a problem instead of like following what your instruction is. You're like, what did you do? And so it's nice to be able to remove all those distractions or even, like you said, like code completion, other things like that where, well, you don't even know what the code should be completed as. Like, why should that be done right now? Yeah,
exactly. But it's funny. So I use Colab with the eighth graders a lot just because it's easier to install the libraries.
Have a clean environment and Python's ready to go. Okay.
It's so ready to go. But because obviously I'm over the age of 14, I have an automatic generative AI coding happening in there. And so as I'm doing code alongs, I start to type and I'm like, oh yeah, that looks good. And they're like, wait, that's not fair.
We're not allowed to do that.
And I'm like, yeah, but I know what's happening. And then when the kids turn 14, they're like, ah, I have my code came on, or they go to an outside login that's not school credentials and then they get it. So there's so many things happening that teachers are constantly on the lookout for AI. It's changed that landscape of things. Yeah. Luckily for your little sixth graders, they're still kind of innocent and cute and enjoying the learning to a point.
Yeah.
And so most of them don't use AI.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering about, like, okay, so a couple things there. One, you are not doing as much classroom teaching currently, but is the sixth grade still one of the ones that you do?
No, I don't. But I had a wonderful, younger, more energetic person who co-taught with me all last year. Okay. And it's like watching me teach. She's so great. But she's so much more energetic back to the days when I first started teaching.
That's
nice. And she's brilliant. She bought all the kids in the classroom these little turtles. So instead of doing
turtle graphics?
No. Yeah. This is their duck. So
who they talk to explain their code. Okay. Nice.
So yeah, she's really cute. But they still follow the basics and they do all of the basic concepts up to dictionaries. They don't do dictionaries, but they do functions.
Okay.
And they still do all the basics in sixth grade.
Yeah. One of the things I was wondering about, this is kind of going back to one of our first conversations together, which was, what are kids interested in programming now? Like, how do you pique their interest? And at the time, you know, being a Gen X kid getting into computers, it was like, oh, I want to make video games or whatever it was and so forth. And so we talked about how, or at least you guys have discussed it, I think, several times, how that's not true for, you know, kids today. There can be kind of interesting offshoots. I remember a recent story of the girls who were making like a choose your own adventure thing, which I thought was really kind of a cool idea and offshoot of that. But like, what is the things that are interesting them now? Like, what is inspiring your students to keep learning?
So it does vary in sixth grade. Most of the time it's for the boys, it's some sort of sport. They always do like their own kind of input conditional app.
Okay.
With sixth grade, very basic, right? This is not to try to like genderfy any of it, but the girls usually do Sephora or Starbucks orders.
Okay.
Because then they can do every Starbucks order. So it's very simplified. These are like 11-year-olds.
Right.
And the boys always do either like some fishing. They don't do the Starbucks, but they'll do fast food.
Okay.
They'll do choose your adventure. Very few do a game. You always have like the one or the two kids that are very into coding.
Right.
That will do the game or the which way.
They might have been messing at home already.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's, and this is kind of what's nice, because then I had one girl do in sixth grade, she did a, like a fashion app, and then she used the,
like choose
the
your top bottom kind of thing, like out of Clueless or whatever it was.
Yes. Okay. And she used the, what's that library? The web where it'll take the URL and it takes you to, it's just a simple click. Here's the URL and it'll take you into it.
Okay.
And so things like that, those are very fun in sixth grade. Seventh grade, the person who teaches seventh grade, she's done a really good job at putting in TK Enter.
Okay.
That has been something she's done now for the past 2 years because the kids love it. And every semester, every quarter, she changes the topic. I think the one that she's doing right now, she's using TK Enter with buttons and the kids are doing some sort of mood. They have a kid in the lower school they designed for.
Okay.
And they have like some sort of mood app or something. They interview the child and what they like, and then they put a picture. It's a lot. It's pretty cool. And she has them change the background.
So they're building out this graphical interface. Yes. And they're like almost like doing a survey of this other person, and they can click on the buttons to, and that's recording that, I guess.
And then one time she had them put in their sixth grade turtle into the graphic. So like just playing around, something that's interactive always is exciting for people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Electronics were kind of a big part of it, I think, too, because the physicalness of it, like seeing the light mm-hmm. flash or what have you, I think was always a big thing for some of the younger students kind of getting into it. I'm very intrigued by that. We discussed a little bit the language stuff. Like, is it the older kids that are getting into more like, say, science-y stuff?
So I have a bunch of high school kids that come back. These are my kids that are way smarter than me. I love them. They're amazing.
Yeah.
I have one kid who is training a model using TensorFlow. He wants to, I forget what he's, if he's identifying the noise or if he's trying to reduce the noise on images of like license plates okay. or something. So I have a server that the school has purchased for me just for this. And so a couple kids were looking at a llama. We're looking at some of the activities that Pamela Fox and Anthony Shaw wrote for basic integration. We've looked at, and this is with my exploratory kids, we've looked at some like AI cameras and how we can use Raspberry Pi with AI cameras. So the kids that want to learn, they get into more, you know, it's always about the project. So they want to get into how they can use that code. I know a lot of the science research love TensorFlow and they've been doing a lot with that.
It's time to shine a spotlight on another RealPython video course. Python has a lot of graphical user interface frameworks or GUIs, but there is only one framework that's built into the Python standard library. This course is titled Building a Python GUI Application with tkinter. It's based on a RealPython article by David Amos and is adapted from a chapter of her Python Basics book. In the video course, instructor Darren Jones shows you how to get started with tkinter with a Hello World application. You'll work with widgets such as buttons and text boxes, control your application layout with geometry managers, make your applications interactive by associating button clicks with Python functions. And along the way, you'll build a couple of applications, including a text editor with saving and loading functionality. I think learning how to use a GUI framework is a good investment of your time. And tkinter is lightweight and relatively painless to use compared to other frameworks. And like most of the video courses on RealPython, the course is broken into easily consumable sections. And where needed, include code examples for the techniques shown. All RealPython courses have a transcript, including closed captions. Check out the video course. You can find a link in the show notes, or you can find it using the search tool on realpython.com. You see them kind of, you know, as they've gone into high school, you said, but another area where they can explore is this, what was the term, the explorer?
Oh, well, the robotics, the exploratory. Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Tell me what that is again, just to make the audience aware of what you're doing there.
So that came out of COVID. During the COVID time, we used to have competitions with Lego Spike Prime.
Okay.
And then when COVID hit, you know, everything was online. So Sean and I made exploratory robotics and we sent everybody home with microbits, servos, and Sean printed out these linear actuators.
Okay.
So we spent the time playing with servos and making robots.
When you say printed, you mean like 3D printed?
3D printed, sorry.
Okay, that's all
right. 3D printed linear actuators so that they can change the direction of their servos if they wanted to. Okay. And so we would make little robots where their heads would swivel, or paper robots or cardboard robots during COVID. Hmm. And then when we came back to school, we didn't want to go back to just Legos. We wanted to have an exploratory program where literally I have almost every robot you can possibly imagine. I have a dog robot from Unitree that you can code with Python. I have not yet finished that. We have a spider.
Okay.
It's very cool. A hexapod. It's huge. It's like.
It fits on a desk, maybe?
It fits on the desk. It's big.
Okay.
And that one's super easy to code with Python. They did a great job with that.
You like code literally individual leg movements and things like that?
No, they have, so it's for kids. So they do really well with something. It'll be like Loco Hex pose, and then it has like the arms moving up. Okay. Or
just preset, like preset functions in it,
that functions and methods, yeah, and stuff. Yeah. And so, okay, fun. It's great. So the sixth graders who've never coded before can get straight in to coding the spider, and it's super.
Yeah.
We have, what else do we have? I have Now Robot, which is this humanoid robot. Do not code with that. I do not code with that with Python. That one uses a different kind of block programming. Okay. It's unique, but it has AI skills in it. So it does voice recognition, face recognition. It's a pretty strong robot, but the whole idea is the kids come in and find their passion. We have another one. The kids are using the Raspberry Pi with a distance sensor and a camera, and they're building, okay, this little moving bot that has, what are the wheels called when the crab kind of wheel so they can go sideways?
Okay. What they're called. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, anything you can imagine, we've got Legos where we hack into, put like a regular Lego box, and then we turn stuff with robot motors and stuff. So it's just anything you can possibly imagine the kid wants. They're like, can I do this? Yes. What do you want?
Nice. Yeah. It sounds like a fun playground then for people to kind of explore and check out there. Some of the stuff I was wondering about. So over the last couple of years, I would say there's been this push toward introducing LLMs in the classroom. And I've mentioned it a few times about, you know, language teachers and kind of they've been hit the hardest because it's very easy for someone to take their homework home and just say, okay, take the instructions that were given to me, put it into the LLM, and boom, here comes my paper. And how some teachers have had to develop new strategies of saying, okay, well, let's have you try to do that. And this is probably with like older students, but I want you to critique what it wrote. Mm-hmm. Is it true? Is it, what are the mistakes? Where is it getting its information correct or wrong or whatever? And kind of interesting strategies. And so I wonder about that with teaching kids or potentially older kids in programming. Is that something that's happening with you where you're giving them projects and they are potentially using LLMs to help them complete them?
In eighth grade, 100%. We just use it. We say to use it anyways.
Okay.
It has been a complete switch. I don't, and this is probably a generalized, I do see a loss in that desire to struggle.
Okay.
And this will be generalized because, you know, you have a whole spectrum of children.
Right.
The child that never wanted to do work will still never do work. And the child that wanted to learn coding is still going to learn coding.
Okay.
The way our program was always designed was always for that middle child, the middle child that didn't know.
Yeah, I think Sean used to focus on this idea of like, I'm not interested in everybody hitting the exact same target. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in all of you from your different levels moving forward. And let's compare where you started and where you ended. And so does that kind of fit into that too?
Yes, still does. But the thing is, so I have personal goals for them to learn, right?
Right.
For example, let's talk about API lesson. I always talk about this lesson because it is my favorite lesson. And I haven't got rid of it. And we always start with the definitions of all the definitions that are involved with APIs, because there's a lot and it's very confusing. Like here we have JSON and HTTP, and here we have an API, and here we have a GET method, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
They don't even know what URLs are, right? So we're talking,
use them all the time, but they don't hardly have to type them anymore.
So we have a list of vocabulary words first. And I make them go into Google, which still gives them an overview.
Okay.
And then make them go into an AI and get a metaphor. And I love it because AI always says, oh, you're a restaurant person. That's always the metaphor that every coder, I guess, gave about APIs, that, you know, you talk to the server goes to the chef, and the chef makes the order.
Right.
And I always tell the kids, I don't want to see a restaurant metaphor about APIs.
Give me something different.
Give me something different.
Okay.
And then we do just the simple request, and I'll do like, I'll use Michael Kennedy's weather API because it's nice and clean and it's easy.
I was thinking that weather. Yeah.
Yeah. We do a very simplified version of what he did on a, one of the courses he did. And so we code along with that. And we talk about it. We talk about, you know, reading the dictionaries. And I always want them to get, be able to read the keys and the values of the JSON.
Okay.
That's like my goal. Be able to explain to me what an API, be able to get something from an API. That's like the basic, that's the requirement. I think that if they know that, then I've done my job.
Right.
But then what we do is we give them some open APIs. And then I say, hey, go put it in Flint. That's fine. You want to put it in Flint's our safe chatbot.
Oh, okay.
It's our kids safe chatbot. They go put it in Flint. And I said, yeah, but whatever it produces, you have to be able to read and explain.
Okay.
And so, you know, we're extrapolating from if they understand functions, but sometimes an AI will give them classes and they'll, you know, if dunder name.
Oh, they're using special methods and all this other crazy stuff. Yeah. Okay.
And so the kids, if they don't understand it, I call them out. And then I also, we use this other AI where it grades and gives them automated feedback. So then they have to take their code. They explain every line of code, making sure to answer the things about APIs. And if they don't get a 4 out of 4, then you don't know it, right? And so that's how it switched.
Okay.
It's a little bit sad because the kids aren't getting in there trying to solve problems because, you know, you go into, they'll go home to ChatGPT even though it's not used in school.
Right.
They'll go home with ChatGPT and create this incredible code
application
script.
Yeah, or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
No clue what's going on. And so we try to keep them from doing that, but to give them building on the libraries. That was a very long answer, but.
No, I get it. Like it's very convoluted to like think about how do I have them incorporate this? So I don't know how Flint is spelled. Is it just
it's
with an
Flint,
I?
Like the, yes.
Yeah. Okay, great. No special spellings here. So. With that interface, they can do a prompt and they can say, I want to, how elaborate is the prompting? Can you say like, I want to use requests to access this particular API? And
yes, okay. It's, I think it's running on it. Last time I checked, it was running Claude in the background.
Okay.
So this program or this EdTech wrapper has our own data storage. It's, it meets all the children requirements, et cetera, et cetera.
True.
It's good, but you have to be able to communicate properly with it. It's not like ChatGPT where you can give fragmented thoughts.
And it starts to complete.
And it's produced.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. With Flint, you really, the kids, we practice communication skills because we're talking about those skills that you need as a developer or someone that's going to work in the workforce.
Right.
You have to be able to communicate and share your thoughts and ideas. So that's the same thing with Flint or most of the educational chatbots. They're that way. Like, how do you communicate well? So that's pretty fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
They get frustrated.
What frustrates them? Like, what are roadblocks they hit doing this?
So, you know, when you put in anything, it'll come out with, it just keeps scrolling the answers, right? Kids don't read. Normal people don't read, actually. They skip.
Yes. Yes.
And then
literally the term is TLDR, right?
Yeah. But it's funny,
frustrating.
Though.
Yeah.
It's frustrating. And the thing is like, actually, there's studies where when you're on a device, you actually read in a Z mode.
Hmm.
So you go top, across, and at the bottom.
Scan. Yeah. Okay. Huh.
Yeah. And so that's frustrating for kids. It's really frustrating when it happens with either when we do file creations, we sometimes use the with open because they don't read. When the AI gives them back code, it'll say with open, insert file name.
Okay.
And the kids don't read insert file name and it can't find the file and the kids get frustrated and they're like, it doesn't work. The code has an error and they're not reading the errors again. So that's what's happening, I think, with the children when they're using the AI more and more is they're not reading. They're reading less and less.
Yeah. There's an article I saw recently and I mean, it's kind of the premise of the article is to kind of make people think a little bit about stuff, but it's literally titled, let me find it, How to Use AI Without Becoming Stupid. And it's a lot of that sort of stuff. Like how much of it do you want to take over what you're doing and so forth? And I worry about it, you know, because like I think about it sometimes, you know, just the smartphones have done serious damage for a lot of other areas of our lives, if you will. Like, who remembers phone numbers? Our brains used to be pretty good at doing all that, you know, and addresses and hundreds of things that you think about, like that were just in our brains that we remembered, and now we just kind of rely on it. I don't know any people personally, but I know that this is a trend that people just have their phone on at all times in the car and use the directions, you know, every day, you know. I mean, I get it if it's like a traffic thing, but like if you just can't even remember how to drive from point A to point B in your own city, it's kind of crazy, you know, like where this weird self-reliance, and with programming, where's the troubleshooting happening? And so like, are there techniques that you use to help them get back to the struggle? Like you said, like they don't struggle as much anymore, and learning is struggling. I'm sorry, but that's part of it. And there are people who like to struggle and like to learn new things and try things out. I mean, as a musician, I struggled a lot, you know, and still do with like things like piano. I try, but I'm not great at it, but the struggle is part of it and kind of interesting. That's what baffles me about the whole generative AI thing as far as creative pursuits. Like, that really makes me frustrated. Like, that people were like, well, it's just so hard to make music. And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of the thing, you know, it's kind of hard to draw. And I'm like, yeah. So I don't know.
I have mixed feelings, I think. And I constantly flip back and forth. When I first started teaching many, many moons ago, I would sit at the front of the classroom.
Yeah.
I had a overhead projector. It's like this thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, remember it from the days, right?
With the markers
with the transparencies
and whatever, yeah.
And transparencies. And I actually found one of these in my parents' garage the other day, and I was laughing, from science. And I would write all these science notes. And then, you know, the next year I wouldn't write them. I would just take the science note and then cover it with another piece of paper and slide down and make them copy notes. We were disseminators of knowledge, right?
Yeah.
We gave them the knowledge that we expected them to regurgitate. So in theory, we were their ChatGPT, their AI, because it was that knowledge that we disseminated. They wrote it down. They regurgitated, they studied it, whatever, and they put it back onto a test.
Okay.
And we thought that was good education, right? So yeah. We've taken away the teacher as the sage, and we've replaced it with a wealth of knowledge, right? Well, like, let's stop, like, go to internet. So the internet came out.
Start with that phase.
So, you know, 2000, whatever, when we were bringing in BYOL, bring your own laptops, not your own beers, bring your own laptops to school.
Okay.
You know, the internet was there, and now they can get all the information. And so we started teaching, Here's a fake website, here's a good website, and how do we make our discernment about those websites? And the information was still there.
Yeah.
But because we still use like paper tests and Scantrons, we weren't worried about the internet giving them information. But we try to outsource and flip the classroom and give kids the knowledge at home and then come back and test on it. So again, we now had just these, went from small little piece of notes, you know, notes in a book, to an internet with information. And now we've said, hey, here's everything you can possibly imagine in the world to learn from.
Right.
And now we're scared. And we're still trying to say that, no, I'm going to give you the knowledge, and you're going to regurgitate my knowledge. And that's going to tell me that you are smart. But my one side of me is like, that's not true.
Okay.
Right? We should not be keepers of information, and in that if a child wants to learn something else, then they go to an AI, they go to whatever, Google Learn, and they learn it. The part that gets me on the far side is at what cost? Like, are we sacrificing those foundational skills of being able to listen to a teacher and record what's being said? Or are we being able to memorize and make connections between what I heard in science and what I heard in math? That's what I think loses out if we don't focus more in the classroom about making those processes of learning happen.
Yeah, I think there's the outside of social studies or history class, or maybe even a lot of language things where it is somewhat of a lectury type of thing, and you need to know these ideas and these facts and like you said, regurgitate them. You know, you switch it to a math class, and there are exercises and there are things that you're practicing and you're doing, and the freak out over calculators, sure, but you know, this is a similar idea in some ways. But the idea of being able to think those things through, and it depends on the teacher, absolutely. I'm sure there are, you know, amazing history teachers and social studies teachers that like bring it into, okay, well, let's discuss this and have a conversation as opposed to me just simply, you know, presenting it to you. And I think programming is now having a new moment, though, where it can be like the internet moment of like all the facts are there, the article is there, I can copy and paste from Wikipedia or what have you. But with code, I mean, yes, there were Stack Overflow and other ways to kind of find answers in the past. But now it's the ability to have someone help you with your homework is different, you know, in that way. And are there new techniques then that you're seeing work in that? Because, I mean, this is, it's an interesting acceleration, if you will.
I think, like, for me, kids are getting... Well, at least in my classroom, you're getting more intimate with reading.
Okay.
And we do a lot more reading code. So it's almost like I'm working in a business or whatever. I'm working in as a developer with a developer team, and somebody writes code for me. I'm reading that code and trying to see what it does.
It's like a code review.
A code review, exactly.
Yeah, interesting.
And see what it does. And I think you can really push those boundaries of making things work. Now,
Okay. The
problem is I have 9 weeks, right? In theory, I would love to force the kids to make a product. Let's literally go into VS Code and try to deploy something. That's hard. Eighth graders can't do that. Most of the high schoolers can't do that, right? That's a learning curve. That's going to be a struggle. Like, let's go into GitHub and see if we can do a pull request. That's really, really hard. I think if we move in our classrooms at the higher level to those skills where, okay, fine, I've put in some vibe-coded AI whatever script and I've uploaded it to GitHub. Now let's code review it.
Yeah.
You have to really get intimate with a code and understand what's going on to give any type of feedback. My kids are not necessarily there at the highest level, but we do keep them in this nice little pocket.
Okay.
Right. And so they do review a lot of stuff. They do review a lot of, they could probably point out what's happening with an API code or dictionary code or with some file handling.
What does that look like in the classroom? Are they adding their own comments to it? Are they explaining it to you in person?
All kinds. Yeah. Sometimes they do their own comments. Sometimes I go and I'll dump a documentation from Python and I'll tell the AI to write some code. We did sentiment analysis one time that way. And I had them using uploaded files and a whole bunch of fake sentiment comments from Instagram, and I had it review the process, and I gave them all this in a packet in a group, and I was like, you have to explain all this, and I'm going to call you to read out lines whatever 8 through 20 and explain it to us.
Okay.
And so there, I've taken away all the AI's comments. So there's no comments in here. All it is the really clean variables.
The pure code.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the, you know, and so they do that, and they'll have to tell me what's happening with this code, and or they'll have to explain a specific four lines word for word and really get into it. And I think what happens and when they get stuck is when we have a function being called down in the main and they have to look down below to see how it's used and how the return is used and where they've reassigned it. That gets hard. And I think if you can get your kids to the point where they have to read functions and how they're playing out within the main program,
yeah,
you really have to know your code. You have to know your code. And so that's what we've done. And so they can read really well. Would they be able to recall it and type a lot by themselves? Probably not.
Okay.
So it's different.
Is that maybe where we're moving to then? Is that we're moving to this ability to be a code reviewer,
somebody's going to have to fix all this mess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So somebody's.
Those are the more advanced classes, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you were to go and start with, I know you're having someone else doing this, like lower level classes now. Are they still starting with like, okay, this is, you know, these are variables. This is a function. Yes. This is
same old.
Okay.
Yeah. They don't go deep, right? We've never gone complete list methods or complete string manipulation. We've never gone extremely deep with sixth grade. We've always gone in that just-in-time learning mode. And so if they had to make something happen in their app that they're making, then we show them, oh, you're going to use this in a list, or you're going to loop through this list this way, or you're going to use this method to pull out this item in the list. And so that's the way we've always done it, because what's the point of memorizing all the methods when you can just go look them up?
Sure.
But they've been completely AI free in the sixth grade. We still keep them.
Okay.
Because it's just pretty. It's their code. If they go to AI, they lose their cuteness, their selves in the code. They get a really great code, but it has no personality.
Right.
And so within a sixth grade, when a sixth grader codes by themselves, you can see their thinking process, right? So we'll see a nested if statements going in.
Sure.
And you've got like 20 if statements. And I sit there and talk to them. Well, you know, we probably could have used a function, but you don't know functions yet. So keep going.
Right, it's fine. And then that's like a great kind of aha moment for them to say, oh my gosh, I could have saved like 20 lines of typing here. So
yeah. 20, they've come in with like 350 lines. It's so cute.
Nice. Yeah,
I will hate the day when it's taken away from them with that stage, because to be honest, they're still sweet, and maybe we have to bring it down to fifth graders. I don't know.
Yeah.
But at the sixth grade level, it's really clear. They're so creative. And when they go to AI, they lose that creative niche that that kids have. So that's the one thing.
Yeah. What I was wondering about is like a couple of the questions regarding like, as you're embracing these new things, what are areas where it's not working out? Like what are things that are kind of like, that you had to like, almost like, okay, this has become like a wall and we're going to have to get around it to figure out how to sort of fix things as far as like progressing with students and them using LLMs? Are there barriers to them like learning using this?
In computer science, for me, I don't think so. I don't think we have the opportunity to say you're not going to use it.
Okay.
Like I'm fully in the embrace mode. I am in the fact that I need the kids to read it and review it. But that's going to be any child that has had help somewhere else. I think my biggest thing is, at least in a school system, is probably working with English teachers, to be honest.
Yes.
I write. I was a horrible writer. I am still probably the worst writer, but I've become a better writer because I use AI faithfully.
Okay.
And when I say I use AI faithfully, I write these crazy, crazy, crazy long chats, or I'll voice sometimes, not a lot, these crazy long prompts. I'm talking like a full page of me just downloading everything in my brain when I have this idea for an article or something. And it's fragmented sentences. It's, you know, grammar's misspelled. And I just download it into... Okay.
It's a full brain dump.
Full brain dump. And then I get back this article, which is not clean. And then it takes me about 3 weeks to go back and research and add. And I think that is super powerful.
Okay.
I think that can be used with coding as well. And you'll see that when they go to these no-code websites, if I put in a no-code website and I just type in a couple lines, make me this whatever app, the app's okay. It looks great, but it's crap.
Right.
Right. But if I download everything in my brain and put some schematics in and I put some setups for the databases and I know where I want to link everything, the app's prettier. And I think if we use that philosophy with code, with English, with whatever, is where we're putting in ourselves into the product, into the large language models, we're going to get more learning happening, right? Because it's something that I want to do. And so I think that's the biggest hill that a lot of us have to like be okay to die on, right? At one point, the foundational knowledge, the foundational skills that we have hold dear so much in our lives, we're going to have to figure out a new way and a new set of skills that are foundational for the future. And I think that's the hard part.
Yeah, I used to be like a big, I worked with this motivational speaker for a while. And so in the language of that world, they would always have this idea of like a paradigm shift or whatever. And this is literally that for teachers right now. And this idea of you can do the brain dump thing, but you also can hone that skill of prompting and getting better at that and improving in that. And it is this literally a form of communication that was happening between teams before, and being a communicator and, you know, being a teacher, you're having to be a communicator all the time. And do you feel like you've improved your prompting skills, and is that something you're sharing?
I can share one tool that I got wowed by from the Explorers Club, and this is like my secret weapon of tools. It's called Prompt Cowboy.
Okay. I haven't heard of it.
It is a game changer. And yes, I have improved my prompting. I don't use Prompt Cowboy a lot unless I need it to do something really fine-tuned.
Okay.
And for example, if I make a special GPT or something that I want to grade a specific thing or write a specific way for school,
okay,
I'll use this Prompt Cowboy, and it goes through the whole, here's the persona, here's what you want, et cetera, et cetera. And at the very end, it always says, your life depends on it. Okay. Because somebody somewhere said that that's going to make the AI write better. But it's a nice tool.
Yeah. We talked about that with Simon. I think he's probably brought it up a few times that you can do these weird, I don't know, coercion almost tactics with these things, which is weird.
It works. But this tool is great. And I don't use it, like I said, I don't use it a lot. I do believe I'm better now with communicating. I use it all day. I have Gemini, ChatGPT, Claude, Perplexity, and then whatever art one I have for school. I have almost every AI open.
Okay.
And I use it for everything depending on what I'm using, you know, what I need to do. So I use it tons, but it's also because I create a lot of documents and I need a lot of wordsmithing to make sure that it's
right. And you already admitted that that's not your favorite thing.
It's not my favorite thing. It has to be branded. It has to be politically correct. I need a proper tone, my voice. Yeah. So whenever you make something for a company, you have to follow the tone of the company, and what better way than have an AI? Yeah.
Yeah. That's the way I've used it is, you know, where I'm, you know, this person used, I was listening to like a review of people, like how they're using AI and so forth. And one of the uses they had was like, I'm going through a divorce and I'm having to write letters to someone else. And I need it to just get rid of all of the emotion from what I'm trying to say and create this thing. And so I think that's really, really useful. Like, again, in like a school environment, there's like certain strictures that are going to need to be followed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I've never had an issue with coming up with great ideas, right? That's my one thing that I don't use AI for.
Okay.
I always have these crazy wild ideas. The problem is like, I don't, not that you can tell because I ran, and I ramble, right? So I love rambling to the AI and the AI gets me.
Okay.
I know it doesn't, but it gets me. And then it gets me to the point where I can.
It captures it at least.
It captures it.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. It's everything I imagined in my brain.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that prompt cowboy. Are there other tools that, you know, what's working for you in the coding world? You mentioned that the students have access to a limited tool that, mm-hmm. you know, works for them. But for yourself, as you're exploring coding and so forth, you mentioned a bunch of them, but what's working for you?
I do use Claude a lot.
Okay.
For coding. And then I use Colab because Colab, once you start to, if you say import request, it'll give you the documentation strings, like the first six or seven.
Okay.
We don't really go into VS Code. I do have it and I'm playing with it. I've thought about putting stuff into VS Code, but for me, when I'm coding my own things, if I do that, then I can't figure it out, right? I get lost and I spend more time trying to debug something. So I haven't quite given in to putting any AI in my VS Code.
Okay.
Which is funny.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm just not there yet. I think someone said we use AI and it's better to use AI for as an expert builder, right? It's so if our expertise is writing, we don't necessarily use AI, right? We're not going to want AI to write for us because we're good at it.
Right.
Whereas if we're a really good coder, most of us aren't going to use AI because we're a really good coder or whatnot. And that's our skill set, but we will use it for other things like write emails or generate documentation. So I think we choose our weaknesses.
Okay.
For AI to improve upon.
That makes sense. Yeah.
At least what I've seen. Yeah.
I'm definitely in the same boat of being much more of a, you know, spoken creator and so forth. And I need to get better in the habit of doing what you're doing, of like sort of brain dumping articles and ideas and so forth, and seeing how it can kind of pull that together for me. Yeah, that's an interesting thing, like finding the gaps that mm-hmm. it can maybe help you fill in. Is that something that you're having to explain to? You went to like a workshop recently, mm-hmm. or almost like a boot camp, where now you're coming back with that knowledge and sharing it with your fellow teachers. Is that something that you're having to explain to them? Like, you need to find out where this is going to work for you in your classrooms.
Yeah, we work a lot. I've done a lot of trainings after this. There's the AI Explorers Club from Harvard.
Okay.
It's the Harvard graduate program. It's great. And that whole program was about intentionality with bringing AI into education and how we're going to use it.
Okay.
Some of the stuff that we explored as educators, you know, we don't use in our school, but because the tools are just not on our approved list,
right?
Which is pretty much proved by me. everything needs to be, make sure our kids are safe. Like that's one of my big things. But anyways,
right?
We do a lot of training on specifics. So we did a training on prompt engineering or context engineering, right? Really getting into the context of what you want to build. And that was a big hit. I think teachers like these really fine-tuned bite-sized, most people, fine-tuned bite-sized PD, right? So we talked about that. We go into Notebook LM. We're doing Zoom AI, which is a super powerful AI if you've never used it. So powerful. There's so much you can do with Zoom AI. Now it's a little bit, it's got some mixed reviews. It says it's safe, but then it doesn't. So we only use it with teachers.
Like Zoom, the meeting
platform? Yeah, they have a built-in AI in the paid-for version.
Yeah, we had used it to summarize our stuff. It was mostly like a transcript, and this is a couple years ago.
Yeah, no, it's way powerful.
Okay, it's probably gotten a lot better because it was off the course quite a bit back then. So
so you can take your summaries and you can take your transcripts that you get after the meeting.
Okay.
And you can fill in a document that you've made in Zoom, and it will fill in pretty good. It will get names sometimes mixed up, or sometimes pronouns, which is a bad thing.
Right.
So you have to look at it, but it will fill in all the information. Also, if you jump into a Zoom meeting late, you're like, what was I mentioned, or what are the takeaways, or what am I to-do list task?
You can get caught up.
Yeah, it's pretty I think it's pretty invasive, but at the end of the day, it's also very, very functional. So
okay.
I don't know if it's what the free version of it is. It is the paid version to get the AI.
Yeah. Okay. Any advice you have, like just general advice for somebody trying to teach students using these techniques that you would say, hey, this is what's working well for us?
Well, I think most importantly is stick to like the approved list of tools at your school.
Okay.
Don't go rogue, because it drives your IT department crazy, because he sees all this shadow AI and it's a big threat. And I think educators don't think about the fact that there are so many risks involved. Just even the, for example, it was a Gamma AI makes slideshows. Well, Gamma had a really big hack, I don't know, a couple months ago, where it sent like three different levels of security to an email. So you thought you were logging into Microsoft, you thought you were doing something else, and you downloaded this supposedly presentation from Gamma that came from someone that you knew, and it had some sort of viral cyber attack. So there's a lot of things happening. Yeah, some malware. And so there's a lot of things that you don't think about as an educator, but you have these poor cybersecurity IT guys every single night freaking out. And so I'm always the one that says no to a lot of things, because I work very closely with the IT department. And that's, you don't know with these ed tech devices or these wrappers what third party is going to. And right. So
what the connections are. Yeah.
And being a computer science person, you kind of know, and you kind of get the idea that there's APIs happening and that their prompt injection can happen. But most educators don't think about these things. And so that's my biggest takeaway is make sure you're doing something safe.
Okay.
Because you can vibe code and create all you want, but if you create and you're putting your school and all the school's data at risk, it's not worth it.
Yeah, not great.
No.
Yeah.
So that's my biggest takeaway.
Yeah, yeah. So I like to ask everybody questions as they come on the show. And this one, I didn't give you a lot of heads up here, but what's something that you're excited about that's happening in the world of Python right now?
Oh, in the world of Python right now. You know what's really sad? And I know this has been out for a while, but this is because I have a project to do. But Python in Excel, I've started looking at that. I think that's going to be really helpful for CFOs who are talking about doing automation or machine learning. Yeah. If we can point them back to something that's a sure thing, maybe our money will stay a sure thing and not be hypothetically predicted upon.
Yeah. Again, talk about approved tools. Excel is something that's been around forever. Yeah.
Exactly.
We talked about that when I had them on the show. Yeah.
Sometimes it's just a good thing.
Yeah. Cool. What's something that you want to learn next? This doesn't have to be about school or Python or anything. It's just, what do you want to learn?
Well, I'm actually going on Tuesday to just one day to the IBM Tech Exchange.
Okay.
And I'm freaking out because there's going to be some really, really smart IBM Watson people there. So I'm going to go learn about maybe some data security and think about things that we can do with in-house stuff here at a school. So that's something that I'm learning now. And I'm also working on some machine learning projects with the CFO to see if we can not do Gen AI, but some real AI projects.
Okay.
So that's something.
Awesome.
I have a lot on my plate right now.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah, you're juggling multiple positions and hats and whatever you want to call it. Yeah. So what's the best way people can follow the work that you do online?
Always at teachingpython.fm. When we release, we're a little bit slow because we're so busy, but always on LinkedIn at Kelly Paredes.
Okay.
And I'm there constantly. I love meeting people on LinkedIn. I've met so many people and I have some great LinkedIn friends.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice.
So,
well, Kelly, it's been fantastic to talk to you again. Thanks for coming on the show.
It's so much fun. Thanks for having me. I could talk all day to you. You're so great.
Thanks. All right.
Have a good day.
All right. I want to thank Kelly Schuster Paredes for coming back on the show this week. And I want to thank you for listening to the Real Python podcast. Make sure that you click that follow button in your podcast player. And if you see a subscribe button somewhere, remember that the Real Python podcast is free. If you like the show, please leave us a review. You can find show notes with links to all the topics we spoke about inside your podcast player or at realpython.com/podcast. And while you're there, you can leave us a question or a topic idea. I've been your host, Christopher Bailey, and I look forward to talking to you soon.